Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
We interrupt our own program. Body, I have some unbelievable news. Trevor Gleeson departs Perth to pursue an NBA opportunity. He's gone. He's out. This is massive news.
It is huge. The most successful coach of the recent era. Five championships, I think it is. Yeah, it's huge. He's going to an NBA opportunity. We don't know exactly what that is, but a coaching opportunity there. So the question becomes, who replaces him?
Yeah, tell me who you got.
Well,
Matt Nielsen.
I think they should. Also, I don't know, why not Brett Brown? Why not put the call in? You know, so yeah, very interesting. I tell you who it won't be, probably Rob Beveridge, but you know, maybe, who knows? Why not revisit Bevo? Anyway, let's leave it at that. We've got a program to give the public.
It's that time of the week again, Brad and Body Podcast. We had some great feedback last week with the Adam Gibson one. We've had Wurtho. Today we've got an absolute beauty, but let's start with you, Body. How are you, mate?
I'm extremely well, thank you. It's been a very good weekend for me. Had my daughter over from Melbourne and my brother over, so yeah, it's been a good time.
And they came over. Congratulations to you, finally inducted into the South Australian Basketball Hall of Fame, mate. Well done. Absolutely stoked for you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It was a really,
speaking
really
of
good
Hall of Famers, we have none other than an absolute superstar today. We've got one of the best. Born in Perth, Western Australia. He attended the Australian Institute of Sport in 1987, spent 4 years at an amazing university, Stanford, and that was between 87 and 91, and was coached by the legendary Mike Montgomery. During his illustrious career in college, he won the best defensive 3 times, most inspirational player, was team captain, and Pac-10 conference and academic team. Unbelievable. He then finished with Stanford and he signed and played his whole 349 NBL career with none other than the mighty Perth Wildcats. During that time, 3-time NBL champion, NBL Grand Final MVP in 95, 2-time All-NBL team, Rookie of the Year. He's a member of the illustrious NBL 20th anniversary team. Keep going, Body. There's more. This guy's unbelievable.
We're going to run out of time before we get to this.
His number 21 was retired by the Perth Wildcats. He is a 2-time Gaze medal winner and in 2007 was inducted to the Basketball Hall of Fame. And finally, he was the rock that made the Australian Boomers the team of what they were. He attended 4 Olympics in 88, 92, 96, and of course, the 2000 Sydney Olympics. I am, of course, talking to none other, the great man, Andrew Vlahov. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us.
Jeez, Brad, that's the best intro I've ever heard. Thanks very much.
All right, and on that intro,
thank you, everyone. 350 time we've got for. Thank you.
You got to 349 games. Did you think about playing on just to get that 350th?
I didn't even know I was at 349, mate. To be honest, it was never about individual achievement.
No. And you had so much great success as a player in so many teams. That brings me to our opening question. What got you into basketball? How did you discover this sport, given that Aussie rules football? You're a big, solid guy. I'm sure there are other options. I know your dad was a very successful athlete as a thrower and also a basketball player. How did you come to basketball?
Well, it came about because I used to go down and watch him train. That was the start of it. But it probably also got accelerated because I used to play footy and cricket after starting my sporting career as a young soccer player, believe it or not. But basically, I got sick of standing in the outfield in cricket in the summer, so I picked up a ball and started playing and ended up joining a school team and then school team for a club team and club onto state. And the rest is, I guess, well-documented. In Brad.
Yes, for those who didn't, just go back to the start of the show.
Andrew, can I ask you, you played state for Perth, is that right?
State for Western Australia, yes.
Yeah, sorry, state for Perth, not good analogy, yeah, straight. And that's where you then obviously got found out by the Institute. Who was the one that was sort of like saw you and brought you there?
Direct result of, I think, a game that Adrian Hurley watched in 1984 down in Launceston. I was playing in the playoff for third and fourth for WA against Big Country. And we lost that game 73-71, I think, but I had 51 in that game.
Wow.
And Adrian came up to me after the game and commiserated the loss in the locker room, but he said to me, hey, you've... you've got a chance if you keep your head down and put the work in. You're a chance to go to the 88 Olympics. And that lit a fire underneath me. And from that tournament, I got invited, and I was playing in the under-16s then. A little-known fact is that last game, Shane Heal and I are in a scoring tussle for the lead scorer of the tournament, but I ended up pipping him on the in that last game. But I ended up getting promoted up to the under-18s, and that's where I met the likes of, you know, some household names that ended up on the Australian junior team in 1987. So we ended up as scholarship holders at the Institute in 1987 and played in the World Juniors with Luke, Brecky, Heal. I could rattle them off for you. Clark, Perry, Boniello, Stelzer, Zadar, Bolling. All guys that ended up playing NBL as well. So we formed a great team. We finished fifth in the world that year, which was the highest place for any Australian junior finish.
And was it through that you got the opportunity at Stanford?
Not through that. It was actually through my father, who was doing his PhD at the time and spent 6 months at the University of Oregon. So he took our family over when I was only 13, and I played junior high basketball and then came back myself on a international rotary exchange and played high school basketball. And the little town in Eugene is home to the University of Oregon and the founding of Nike. So it's a little bit of a famous team, and I think they recently just had the US track and field Olympic trials there. But the guy that was the assistant coach at the University of Oregon transferred after I'd finished my high school season to Stanford. And he told Mike Montgomery that there was a kid in Oregon, he's from Australia though, was worthy of, I guess, recruiting. So Mike ended up flying out to Perth. He was the second coach to do that, and sat down with my parents and convinced my dad particularly that Stanford was a good place for me to go. So following that meeting and the rest of the coaches that came out and a couple of recruiting visits back to the US, my dad said, you can go to any university in America as long as it's Stanford.
And this amount of time you've spent in the United States explains this pronounced American accent that you now have.
Pen it up, Bobby. You've got no idea.
No, seriously, the Stanford experience, was it a good one for you? Because we've had varying commentary about college basketball. Some people had the best experience they could possibly have wanted, and others were almost turned off the sport. So what was your experiences like? Because from the sounds of what Brad said in the intro, it was fantastic on pretty much every level.
It was, and I'm, you know, definitely one of the ones that had a fantastic experience. I mean, academically, it's arguably the best university in the world. So being in that space and being a reasonable student was really, it was challenging, that's for sure, because we got no leeway from professors and stuff. So it doesn't matter that you're on the road and playing and you still have to handle your assignments in on time and stuff like that. So it was really hard, challenging from an academic point of view, but ended up, you know, doing okay there. I finished my degree in economics. And then the guys that I met on the team, again, we were part of the first team to crack back into the NCAAs in 1989. A couple of our guys ended up getting drafted. Todd Lichty, who played for us,
yep,
in the late 90s, and Adam Peake, who played for a decade through Atlanta and Utah, I think. So we were sort of the start of the ascension of Stanford, and I think it culminated in a Final Four appearance in 2002, I think, maybe. I should know that, but I don't. But yeah, so I had a fabulous experience, met great people, and still, you know, on a daily basis almost talk to some of my former roommates, teammates, and, you know, and coaching staff.
And that's what it's about, isn't it? All the teammates. I want to ask you, I remember Wurtho, we were speaking to him a little while ago, who, you know, you were his childhood champion. Being 4 years at Stanford, do you come out completely ready for the NBL? Because I look at players now, this one and done situation where they come out raw and have to learn their trade, where you look like you came in and you were ready to go. Did you feel that in your rookie year?
Yeah, certainly. And given that I'd played in an Olympics and a World Championships before playing in the NBL, I think gave me an excellent grounding, because the guys that I was in training camp with the Boomers were some of the best in the country. So I felt like I was ready for the level of the league, no doubt. And then sort of coming into a Wildcats team in 1991 that had already won the championship in 1990, expectations were obviously pretty high. But that group was a phenomenal group, and we had another championship year in my first year. So I was very lucky, very blessed.
Do you feel, and I love hearing this and hearing it from you, do you feel nowadays that players just aren't as experienced and haven't got that grit like you guys had? Like, I remember growing up, the Perth Wildcats was a fortress. You know, you just know if you come up against them, you know, there's the Crawford, Vlahov, Fisher, you know, like you were going to come up against a brick wall. It just doesn't feel like that nowadays. Do you sense that?
Well, I think the Wildcats' home record's pretty bloody good, actually. So over the last, you know, or even 10 years, let's say, between Bevo and Gleeson, home wins for the Wildcats is a staple diet. And I think, I don't know what the percentages are, but I think we'd have one of the best home records in the country. So teams coming over here, I think, know what they're up against with the Red Army. We've had some fabulous players come through in time that have been, you know, exceptional players. But I think it goes beyond the individual players. It's what the club is all about and how it approaches success. And the detail that I feel like we were part of the crucible that formed that in the early 90s, and particularly with the leadership of Kerry Stokes, that brought the dimension of professionalism that still exists today. And that is where I think I feel like our culture was well and truly cemented in that sporting landscape. The guys that were the real pioneers, the Mike Ellis's of the world, Eric Watterson's, those guys that did the hard yards without having probably the tools. I think we missed out on a granny in 87 when the Bullets beat us, but we ended up getting revenge in 1990. And then that's just kick-started, you know, that 87 championship, sorry, 87 finals inclusion, was the start of an incredible history of finals appearances in any sporting code in any league around the world. So we're really proud about that.
Yeah, it's unparalleled. And as you say, that I believe you're 100% correct that that's where the culture began with you guys, and then it's been perpetuated on with each group. It's been quite fabulous, and the envy of the rest of Australia, to be completely honest. Now looking at you when you played for the Wildcats, you were such a tough, but at both ends of the court, you were defensively so solid, offensively very, very strong, but rebounds, etc. And then you put on the green and gold uniform and you were even tougher. So what happened when you pulled on that uniform for Australia? What happened to you, Angelo? Is it that just representing your country was such a point of pride because you were such a strong player at one level and then you just take it to the next?
Yeah, it was a point of pride. It was something that was a lifelong goal for me. And that, you know, I go back to that locker room. I can remember it like yesterday in Launceston when Adrian tapped me on the shoulder and said, if you put the work in, you can do it. And that was, you know, when I achieved that in 1988, it felt like, that I knew I'd put the work in and knew how to achieve success. And it was understanding what you were good at, what you weren't good at, where you sat in a team environment. So there were always many better offensive players than me on the floor. And I felt like if I was going to be a constant in any kind of winning formula, that I had to do the things that other people probably didn't want to do or weren't as good at. So that's how I sort of approached the game. I knew I could score at when needed to, but we had better scorers than me. So it's kind of like specialisation of labour, ultimately. is I'm much more comfortable letting Andrew Gaze and Shane Hill take forward than probably Bradkey. But we all knew our role, and I think that group was again very professional in how we approached our work, be it at a training session or at a World Championship or at an Olympics. So, you know, we understood roles. We had great communication because we're all mates. And like I said, I think the part that made it probably more special for me is, you know, you can't put a price on representing country. And and that's what I always wanted to do and was lucky enough to do it a number of times.
Yep. Well, the first time I saw you in action was at the Apollo Stadium ahead of the 1988 Olympics when we had that series against the Soviet Union.
Yes.
And I mean, I'd never seen you before. And I'm just looking at you as a physical specimen. You were a beast. You were tremendously cut and looked fantastic. But the thing that most impressed me about you was you seemed quite cool in terms of very relaxed about it. And you were still a kid then and making your debut, but your demeanor was one of very relaxed about what you were doing, which you don't often see. I mean, if you see a young man playing for a national team, a senior national team, usually they're nervous and they're keen to do well, not screw up, etc. But you had this demeanor. So was that what was going on inside you, or inside you was there a sort of a cauldron of excitement? Because the way your on-court persona was terrific.
Well, that's good. I've never even thought about that and body your observation of that. I will leave with you, but I was nervous for sure. We played, I think, in Perth previously, and I did my ankle 2 days before, but they taped it up like a frigging cast, and I was going to play a few minutes and played a few minutes, I think, in Adelaide. But I think the one thing that the grounding at college in America gave you was playing in front of large arenas or in front of large crowds in big arenas and not being overawed by that scenario and learning how to cope with blocking out these sort of, I think the psychologist at the Institute used to call it the external distractions. Being able to focus in on what you needed to do and make it about process, not about outcome. And so, you know, my routines were always very, very consistent with how I approached the game mentally from, you know, from the time I had my pre-game meal is when I used to start. So learned that early on. And again, learned that from some of the guys in college. But, yeah, just developed that as my own routine, I suppose, to keep a very level head, because in the battle, when there's body parts and everything going past you, you've got to keep a focus on what you need to do.
Yep.
I want to talk about your career here with Perth. You played 11 seasons, whatever it is, as we said, 349 games, three NBL championships. Is there a season, and you played with some amazing players, you mentioned Todd Lichty before, James Crawford, Ricky Grace, Scott Fisher, all these. Is there a team that stands out one above the other, or is it just all in?
Well, that's a toughie. I mean, from a results point of view, I'd point to the 95 team when we're all probably now mid to late 20s. I think James kicked over 30 just. And well, you never know with Crawford. He's lying about his age every other day.
it's like Al Green, yeah.
Whether it was 30, 35, 32, it changed each week. But I think that 95 team was really special. We won the preseason, we won the regular season, we won the championship, we went and played in the McDonald's Open, we lost to the Rockets, but then beat Real Madrid. So that team, to me, was a really good blend of peaking performance athletes, you know, myself, Crawford, Fisher, Grace, in that category. And then we had the youth coming through in Traher, Catalini. And so we had a really good mix of talent, youth, experience, etc. So that team stands out. But I probably also, in terms of special teams, is the 2000 team when we had Paul Rogers, we had Stewie. Stewie actually was on that 95 team. That that was also a very special year because that was my first year of ownership. And we put together a really good team, and I felt like we had great balance as well. And it was a fun, you know, fun time.
Right. Okay, well, he's asked you about your best Perth team. I'm going to ask you about your Olympic teams, because out of your four Olympics, three of them played off for a bronze medal, which was, you know, that still is our best achievement anywhere. So out of those three teams, 88, 96 and 2000, is there one that stands out that was our best team, or that was our best chance and we didn't take it? Like, talk to me about those.
Chances. I think 96, unfortunately, Luke wasn't able to play.
Yes. Yeah.
And then in 2000, I think, was our best chance. And I felt like, Luke got hurt, I think, in the crossover game or the...
game with France, I think. Yep.
Yeah. And so that was a blow. But I felt like our offensive system wasn't optimal for the guys that we had on the floor. And I felt like that could have been something that when you look back in hindsight and you say, how come you didn't win a medal? That was probably one of the things that I would look at to say that we did not tailor-make our offense for the talent we had on the floor and the advantage that we had on the floor. But either way, you know, it's one of those tough things that you have to deal with in life. We had a good crack at it. We didn't get there. So you just dust yourself on and keep going.
Andrew, you finished your career with Perth and then you went on to an owner. So going from a player to an owner, talk to me how that was. Obviously, you know, now you've gone from training every day to being business and running the office. How did that, you know, come about, and how did you find that?
Well, the chronology was actually a little bit different because I took over the ownership and still played on for three more seasons. So I was a owner player at the time, which was apparently unique in the world. And then the next bloke to do it was Michael Jordan. So he did it with the Wizards. And so it was an interesting situation, but it was one that came about because Kerry Stokes was on to bigger and better things and was relocating to the East Coast. And, you know, he said he was going to spend half his time between Los Angeles and Sydney because he just bought half of MGM. And so the opportunity was, you know, I guess presented as, you know, that we'd have different owners other than Kerry. And they let me know who the two interested parties were. And I said, well, what about a third option? And they said, oh, yeah, what are you thinking? And I said, well, what about, you know, this configuration of myself and Luke? And Kerry really liked it. And he maintained a 25% ownership while Luke and I each got 37.5% and stayed on and helped guide us, you know, in the transition into ownership, which was, you know, it was a hell of a ride. We did not know how to run a basketball club, but we knew the basketball side well, but not the business side very well.
Right.
And so we went, you know, into immediate, you know, very steep learning curve, and we took it on. It was operating a significant deficit, and I feel really proud of being able to bring it into balance within 4 years. So it took a lot of time and a lot of effort and a little bit of money, but we got there and basically, you know, reconfigured the club with certainly a bigger community focus, and definitely, you know, we didn't drop the ball at all in our playoff appearances. And by a stroke of very good luck, we managed to sign an MVP in Paul Rogers and won the championship in our first year. So It was a great ride, ultimately, and the transition for me was, you know, I spent 3 years, mornings I'd train and afternoons and evenings I'd be the CEO and an owner. Mm. So it was an interesting time, for sure.
Was that ever awkward, being a player, and like if someone's coming in and negotiate a contract and you want to say, well, listen, you've been dogging it at training. Was that ever an awkward situation?
Well, I had very good locker room intel, but... No, I was very, and the first person I actually told, I went to see the coach, Alan Black, and I said, this doesn't change our player-coach relationship. It will change a relationship that happens away from the court. And I don't believe, you know, I went backwards as a player, and we managed that situation, I think, quite well, because ultimately I felt like, you know, as a leader, you know, I was wearing way too many hats as a captain and the CEO and an owner. But I always felt that my leadership was respected. It maybe not have been the most popular, but it was respected. And ultimately, you know, the decisions we made collegiately as a group. And, you know, it was a great learning curve for me personally, but, you know, I felt like we probably don't get enough credit for doing what we did, given the circumstances and our meagre balance sheet that we had at the time.
Yeah. Mm. All right. And then we just had breaking news today about Trevor Gleeson leaving the Wildcats. Did that catch you by surprise?
Look, there's been some conjecture in the media previously about, you know, Trevor's been in demand in other places around the world, in particular Asia. The announcement today was surprising, given that we've just transitioned to a new ownership group, and I would have thought that one of their first orders of business would be to ensure that there's continuity within the club, and Trevor represents that in terms of what he's done over the last 8 years. I think 5 championships he's won. And so the system itself now is hit reset. So it'll be very interesting what happens in the next month. You know, they need to find a coach pretty quickly.
And that was my next question I was going to throw to you. So you're the owner now again, and you've taken up this situation the last few years where you've now lost Trevor, you lost Damo. Obviously, Jesse Wagstaff has signed on for another year, but, you know, Greg Heyer, there's a lot that's gone now. Who do you go and get? Is it the Matt Nielsen who was an assistant coach? Is Brett Brown out there? What would you be doing if you're owner?
I'd be talking to both of those today, and seeing exactly what their short and medium term plans are. I think either one of them would be sensational. And certainly, you know, there's plenty of coaches probably in the US that have a reasonable resume, but both of those guys know the club. You know, Brett knows the league. I'm a huge fan of Brett as a coach. And I think either one of those would be satisfactory. Put it that way.
I'm going to ask you a quick question, though. Would you look outside the NBL to put a coach in, or do you think someone that has the NBL experience, like what you're saying about Brett Brown and Matty, is the key?
Well, I think there's pluses and minuses to both. I mean, Sydney Kings went and got an American coach that clearly they did their homework on. The advantage of recruiting inside the NBL is, you know, the look and feel of how the league is and the strengths and weaknesses of other, you know, teams and clubs and coaches. But to reset the organisation, I mean, we did it in 1991 with Murray Arnold. So being part of that process was, again, you know, success is the stable diet here. And if you aren't successful, you don't have longevity. So that's just a simple equation that the Wildcats operate under.
Would you talk to Andrew Vlahov about being coach?
That bloke's useless as a coach, for sure. No, I wouldn't, because I got no runs on the board. I love the game. But I think, you know, people that have done their apprenticeships, like Matty Nielsen, you know, they've been around the league, et cetera, et cetera. You need more than just ex-players. You need, you know, the modern game is a completely immersive occupation. And whoever we get, no doubt, will be a very good coach. And, you know, from my point of view, I'll be just hoping that they get a really good person as well.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. The club's always been known for that. Andrew, at this time of the pod, what we do is we ask you some names about people that you know, and all we're looking for is like one word, one sentence, what they meant to you and things of that nature. So I'm going to start it off with a good mate of yours, Luke Longley.
Great friend, superior intelligence. He should maybe be considered as a potential coach. Ooh, that's not one word I know, but
no, that's
all right. That's fine.
How about outstanding individual?
There you go.
Okay, still two.
And a high for those two.
Oh, okay. All right. Mine's Adrian Hurley.
Best coach I ever had.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next one, Kerry Stokes.
A brilliant leader for any organisation and company, and I think the Wildcats and Western Australia owe him a great deal for what he did for the club.
Nice.
Ricky Grace.
Best point guard to ever play in the NBL.
Wow. Great answer. Yeah. Another one of your teammates, James Crawford.
Serious athlete that to this day I still have not seen his equal, and that includes, you know, some phenomenal people, James Ennis included. Crawford was a freakish athlete, and it was a pleasure to play alongside him.
Last one, Mark Bredke.
Probably my toughest opponent in the league. Mark, a good friend too, and a great, you know, Aussie teammate. But Mark was, just a difficult opponent to, you know, to play on, play against, to try and score on, to try and defend. He was the reason that the Tigers won their championships. It wasn't Andrew Gay. It was Mark Rex.
Right. Oh, brilliant answer. Andrew, just before we let you go, I just want to ask one thing. What are you actually doing now?
I work for myself. I am, the easiest way to explain it, as a consultant.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yes.
Andrew,
it's been great.
It's an absolute privilege. This one's gone on longer than we normally do, just because the insight to you was unbelievable. You are an absolute champion, and we cannot thank you enough. And can I just say, before I spoke to you, Boddy and I chatted, and I actually said that it actually felt nervous talking to you a little bit, and I feel like I was talking to my school teacher, because I'm still in awe of you, mate. You are just such held in such high regard that it still is an aura to speak to you.
Hey, that just reminded me.
You're too kind, mate. You're too kind. I'm sure Bonnie would be less diplomatic. He said it went on for so long because you wouldn't shut up.
Yeah, don't you worry. That's exactly where I was going. But there's actually a story that I think you might have stomped on Brad's head or something. What, Brad? Do you want to just quickly finish with that?
I don't know if you remember this, but we were in Perth and there was this little 5'10" white guy causing you problems, and that was me. And basically, I fell on the floor and you stepped on my ear, and my ear has still got a vein sticking out of it. And lo and behold, I'm still shocked because Melvin Thomas came over and said, "What did you do that for?" and pushed you. That was the most words I heard from Melvin in the three seasons I played with him.
That's amazing. I'm sorry about that, Brad. I do not recall that incident. And I'm normally pretty good on that.
Look, if you're free, we'd love to have more chats. We still didn't get to speak about a whole lot of Boomers things and everything, but thank you so much
Oscar
for joining.
Schmidt. I had Oscar Schmidt up my sleeve. Oh, yeah, never mind. Next time, Andrew, next time.
All right, whenever you want, boys. And the reason, Bonnie, is you're the most respected guy in basketball media that I ever dealt with.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Really appreciate that. Thanks very much.
He just got inducted into the South Australia Hall of Fame as well, which was well-deserved. You know, that was so much fun, Boddy. It actually felt like me talking to, like, my school teacher. And you know why I say that? Because he is just he's got such an aura. It's not like I'm speaking to a player in my era. I'm speaking to, like, the Mac Daddy.
Well, that's what I said. Even in 87, 88, when I first saw him playing for Australia, he had this countenance that was, like, really imposing.
Yes, it just felt like, you know, like we talked to Chris Anstey, we've spoken to all the coaches, and this one just felt like you're talking to Papa, you know, like it's just, but man, what a story, that guy, he's done everything.
Yes, he has, and I'm sure he's going to follow the Australian team with great interest in Tokyo, because what we saw in that first game, to me, I was very encouraged. I just came out with two words or one name, Matisse Thybulle. He really impressed me at both ends of the floor, showed us things that we haven't – well, he hasn't been able to show necessarily in the NBA situation. Mm. So any reservations anyone may have had about him, myself included, out the window. Really like the look of this team.
He was great. Let me ask, I'm going to throw some things at you, though, because these were the things that I look at and I'm starting to think, what's going to happen at the Olympics? Where are we going to go? You know, where could we lose? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because what are we great at? Let's say that. We're great with our defense. We're great running the floor. We can hit shots. Paddy Mills has again gone to another level. You know, you spoke about Vlahov when he puts that singlet on, mate.
Yes.
Paddy Mills is one of those.
Absolutely, no question. And Ash Barty winning Wimbledon further inspired
him. Good was that? Yeah.
Carrying the flag, everything. Like I'm expecting a great Olympics from Paddy.
Absolutely. So he will be unbelievable. But the scoring drought. I look there at sometimes and I'm thinking, the only guy that can score for us is Paddy. Now, there's guys that can score when they're given the ball in the right areas. Paddy's the only one that can create it that I can see. Am I right? Dele's good on the on balls and things, but...
I think we don't want to get rushed too far ahead on just the strength of one game. This is their first game together. Let's give them a couple. We've got a couple more to go. We've got the USA and a couple others. Let's see how it all pans out. But I looked at that team and I got excited. You know, when I saw the names on paper, I thought, yeah, this is an okay team. This is a good one. But then when I saw them on the floor, even when they had that flat patch, they fell, 9-10 points behind, and they came back, went 11
ahead. How big is that? You know, it's great.
Yes. Yeah. And so, but then you also got to think, well, what was Argentina doing? Like, were they that concerned about winning the game that they put some subs in? Like, because you're not really paying attention to them. I mean, the only thing that stood out for them was Lewis Scola, like 41 years old, still getting it done. No wonder he's a god in that country. But you know, like, I wasn't really paying that close attention to them. So you're looking at us and you're sort of basically in that patch where Argentina got away, you saw the worst of us. And in that patch where we came back and then went 11 ahead, you saw the best of us. So you sort of thought, well, okay, somewhere in between is who we're going to be. That's good enough to get a medal. And now I'm thinking,
well, hang on a sec.
The Nigeria USA result, does that mean USA is vulnerable, or does that mean we got a lot more trouble in our group with Nigeria as our opening game than we anticipated?
My answer is both.
Yeah.
USA are in trouble. But, you know, they missed some shots that I just couldn't believe that they missed. But in saying that, Nigeria, damn, they're going to give us trouble. Absolutely, they're going to give us trouble.
They're going to give everyone.
It's the Olympics, you know. Yes. Like, Mike Brown's a great coach too.
Yeah. Well, they've got 7 NBA players.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not some sort of backward African nation that we should just immediately pencil in a victory. This is going to be a tough, like when we were thinking, looking at the group, everyone said, oh, we've got the best group. It's going to be a tough group, but it's the best group because you should be able to get Germany, should be able to get Italy, should get Nigeria. Well, maybe we've got to step off that a little bit.
It's definitely not the group of death, as they call them. It's not one of those, but it is going to be tough. My other question I had for you with the Boomers, because I did love what Aaron Baines is just a rock in that middle. Like, he is such a boulder to move. But when he comes out, we go small, don't we?
Yeah, we do get small.
I'm just hoping that doesn't hurt us. You know,
Do we get fast?
Yeah, that's good. But then you've got to get stops. You can't be good if they're giving up offensive rebounds every 2 minutes.
But look, honestly, I was quite impressed with the group as to what its potential might be. You know, like not what it is right now, but just looking at how, and they're still feeling their way, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, when Sobey came in, he didn't want to screw up, you know, but then he actually was quite good. I was quite thrilled with him.
You could tell he was nervous when he came on. He had a turnover the first time that he was on the court, which would tear Gorge's hair out.
Doesn't have any.
Yeah, that's true. And then he came, but then he came good and was the NBL Nathan Sobey.
Yeah. Who we discussed last week was the highest Australian vote getter in the NBL MVP. So absolutely has every, and has earned it. We're not talking about that, but I'm really saying that I saw how these pieces are going to fit and thinking if they can get this together in time, they're going to be definitely a medal threat.
Where does Chris Golding fit in for you?
I thought he did really well. He grabbed an offensive rebound, grabbed a defensive rebound.
Hit the three.
You know, I thought he was fine. I don't think he had too much to worry about, but I think he's going to be used as that microwave sort of player. We need a bit of instant offense, get Chris in, bang up a couple of shots.
And that's my point. Where can he be used in that way? Do you know what I mean? Because he did everything right that you could ask of him, but there's only 40 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, it's not
easy. He's a game time situation player. Right. So I don't think he figures in the main plan, but he figures in hey, you know, this team's playing a zone. Let's get him in there. Bang, bang, bang. Take him out of that zone. You know, I think that's where his role is going to be, and that's a very important one. I wouldn't underestimate it. You started off in this conversation saying you're a little bit concerned about where our points might come from if Paddy's off or shut down or whatever. So we do have guys that can score in bunches. You know, I thought Landau was a little tentative early too. I thought he had to sort of find his way. But yeah, I liked it. I came away from this.
Complete, so much upside. And I'll tell you what, if you're the Melbourne United and you're watching Delhi run that show and come off on balls, oh, man, would you just be frothing? You've just signed him to a 3-year deal.
Yeah, and but also, you know, if you're the Masters Games, you're sweating it because you're looking at that United team. You got Brad Yuley at 36. You got Delhi coming in at 30. You got Gordy's over 30. Barlow's well over 30. They've got to drag back David Anderson, surely. And surely their other import has to be Luis Scola at 41. Let's go for the oldest.
You know who the youngest bloke in the team's going to be? Dean Hickman.
Yeah. So, Amber, let's get back to the USA. I'm not as concerned about them because they have only been together like 5 minutes. They'll get that sort of personnel. I don't think we really have to sweat on them. I think what we have to do, though, is take into account Nigeria because that was no USA team wants to lose to anyone. So it's not like they were phoning it in or anything. Nigeria played great. But maybe that was Nigeria's – let's see the next couple of games. Maybe that was their shot in the locker. Right.
I mean, they hit, what, 22 threes or something? Yeah. You're not going to do that every game. You know, you're not going to do that. So I agree with you. It's I was watching the game and I'm thinking, you know, Kevin Durant's not going to miss those shots like he missed. You know, like Damian Lillard's missing layups and, Tate – was it Tate or
Jason Tatum?
Jason Tatum. Sorry, he misses a wide open. Like, mate, that is what he'll do at the Olympics, you know. Yes. So, yeah, it's certainly not something you'd worry about. But geez, anytime you lose and it's the US, it's a big deal, isn't it? And what a win
for encourages everyone else.
Yeah, and what a win for that country, Nigeria. That's just amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
But that's the thing, Brad. They might dine out on that a little bit for a while. And maybe then they do come back to the pack. Maybe that was their, like I said, their shot in the locker. That was their big one. And maybe they went too early. It reminds me perhaps a little bit of a goodwill games that Australia attended ahead of a world championship back in Barry Barnes' era. And they did really well. They got to the final of the goodwill games. They showed everything in the goodwill games. They knocked off a lot of the countries that they were then going to play in the world champs and come world champs. Everyone knew what we were doing and we had a very poor world championship as a consequence. So wait to see with Nigeria, but as you say, that's a great moment. Anytime you beat USA in international basketball, at any level, it's a big win.
Now, I just want to let everyone know, because I know we have avid listeners, we are not forgetting about, of course, our Opals. Okay,
I forgot all about them.
Yeah, we're not forgetting about our Opals. They are obviously coming up to the Olympics, and we are going to be having some special guests hopefully coming on soon. Body.
Maybe next week. Maybe next week. No, you know, just stay tuned.
Stay tuned. And we do want to talk about the Opals and have a good wrap of them because we're very excited. Obviously, anytime we go to any world championships or Olympics, we're always in with a show with the Opals. So we'll be definitely giving some updates. Body, that was a fantastic day, mate. I want to finish again on a huge congratulations with you for making the Basketball South Australia Hall of Fame. I nearly said New South Wales then.
But yeah, I've got my fingers crossed.
They might have you there.
I was born in New South Wales. I've got my fingers crossed.
But, mate, an absolute magnificent honour. I heard your speech went down really, really well. Everyone woke up at the end, but I just want to say
it's I'm actually now marketing it as a cure for insomnia. You can buy the DVD or CD online at my website.
The problem is they fell asleep, they started to record the ceiling, so you can't see body.
You can just hear me. That's why, maybe get the CD only.
It's a magnificent achievement and exactly what is deserved. So well done, mate. Congratulations.
Thanks very much. I really appreciate that, Brad. And
mate,
I look forward to
everyone, have a fantastic week. Stay safe to all our New South Wales listeners, me included. We're in lockdown. Be safe. Everyone out there, this COVID thing, I'm getting my jab this week, body, on Friday. So hopefully that will help.
Yeah.
But to everyone else, stay safe and we'll see you next week.
So, what did you think was the best moment of the Boomers' performance? seriously now, where I, you know, no one can hear us.
Well, what did you think?
Oh, look, as I said, Matisse Thybulle, he really impressed me. And those dunks that he threw down, they were like really full of venom. They were the highlight for me.
Mate, did you watch the end of the game? Yes. Paddy Mills, come on!
Yes, yes. I have seen Paddy do that before, though.